You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Tell you why I was laughing.
You know, it's funny. This is Rational Revolution. Mark Becker here. I just want to say hello. You know, it's every week I seem to like start the show by going, "Oh God, here we are." There's so much to talk about. But if you missed last week's episode, it was awesome. We had my very dear friend Ahmad Rivera Wagner, the best new representative in the state of Wisconsin, and he brought with him a friend of his and a friend of ours now, Officer Harry Dunn from the U.S. Capitol Police. It was a brilliant episode, and it had nothing to do with me. It was all of them. If you missed that episode, check it out. Seriously, that episode, this episode, civicmedia.us or wherever you get your podcasts. And the reason I was laughing was because the intro music played, and we have this guy who everybody knows, your friend and mine, Mr. Chairman Ben Wickler, joining us, and he was rocking out in the car. I see you as we're, what car are you in? What is that?
I'm in the car of my Deputy Finance Director Hazel, who's here with me. We're driving to Chicago to try to go raise some money to counter the flood of right-wing Elon Musk billionaire oligarch dollars that are flooding into Wisconsin to elect Brad Schimmel and defeat Susan Crawford. We want to stop them, so that's why we're on the road.
We do want to stop them, and it's wonderful. I want to hit on that. I think it was that we just learned that all of this money is pouring into these races out of state from, you know, Elon and his allies. And I hate to keep saying Elon because it's like, you know, the Sith Lord, the dark guy. And, you know, what is going on?
Trying to run basically a coup, disobeying the Constitution, disobeying Congress, disobeying the courts, doing to the federal government what he did to Twitter, which is to fire nearly everybody, break a bunch of stuff, and turn it into a playground for, you know, right-wing billionaire extremists and their lackeys to enrich himself at the expense of everyone else.
And that's
doesn't want any checks or balances. Like that's the thing, is having state courts that actually check the power of people who break the law. That makes a big difference in the world, and he doesn't want it. And so, what we're seeing right now is Elon Musk, you know, obviously played a big role in helping elect Donald Trump, but that's not enough power for him. He wants to take over state courts as well. He wants to make sure we don't have someone like Susan Crawford who believes you actually have to pay attention to what the law says and not just what right-wing billionaires want when you figure out how to adjudicate cases.
Right. You know, and I think we're about the same age. And so we understand, I have a deep love for Miss Frizzle. And, you know, take chances, make mistakes, get messy, except when we're dealing with the federal government. You know, we don't want that. We'll come back to that. I want to hit on, you've been really, really busy lately. And so Ben Wickler, chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, you ran for chair of the mothership. Talk about that experience.
Right. Yeah, so I had not planned to run for DNC chair. This was not on my bucket list of life goals.
Not on the bingo card?
Not on the bingo card, but... And I thought that Kamala Harris was going to win the election, you know, like so many of us did, that we felt this enormous energy in Wisconsin. And that's where I'd been putting my focus. And on election night, I had this feeling in the pit of my stomach as we watched Donald Trump romp to victory. Like, had any of this work that we'd been doing for years actually made any difference at all? And the next morning I woke up and I started digging into the numbers. And what I discovered is, in Wisconsin, it did make a difference. That Democratic turnout fell in most of the country. In Wisconsin, it rose. It's true that there were more Republican voters who came out of the woodwork and cast ballots for Donald Trump than we'd expected, and enough to carry Trump to victory, but only by a hair's breadth, by 0.9%, less than 1 point. And meanwhile, a lot of those voters really were voting just for Trump. They didn't show up for Eric Huffey in the Senate race. They didn't show up down ballot. And we had organized to support Harris, but also Tammy Baldwin and also our state legislative candidates, our congressional candidates. And on that same day, you know, Harris got more votes than Biden. And those voters also voted for Baldwin. And so Baldwin won also by less than 1 percentage point, but she won her Senate race. And we flipped 14 state legislative seats. We did better than any other battleground state, better than Democrats in almost any state in the country. And we could see the impact of having engaged year-round instead of just dropping in the last 2 months of this election. Communicated everywhere, made the contrast, made the case. So I started getting calls from people urging me to run for DNC chair. And I thought, if we can do in, you know, what we've done in Wisconsin on a nationwide basis, we can help contain the damage that we know is going to come with the Trump administration and fight for working people across all our communities and rural areas and cities and suburbs alike across the country and make win a ton of elections, make a big difference in this country over these next 4 years. So I jumped in, and I'm really proud of the campaign that we ran. We were able to, my slogan was unite, fight, win. We were able to unite most of the party around the campaign. We had the support of the Democrats in the Senate and the Democratic governors and the Democrats in the House. We had the support of the unions. We had the support of the grassroots organizations across the country. What we didn't have was the majority of the voting members of the Democratic National Committee.
Yep.
And what I realized at the end was the same adage that I applied to Wisconsin was true of the Democratic National Committee voters, which is you can't jump in the last 2 months and expect to earn the voters' trust. You have to organize to win. And my fellow candidate, Ken Martin, who I've known for years, has been kind of working his way towards this for years as head of the State Chairs Association. And so he was known to the voters and trusted by them. And, you know, they went with someone that they knew, which, you know, it happens sometimes. But it means that I'm now back home and feel I'm proud that I tried to do the biggest thing I could think of to try to fight back against this administration. And, you know, a close second is being in Wisconsin on the ground fighting to elect Susan Crawford to beat Brad Schimmel in the most important election, maybe of the entire year, certainly of the first 10 months of this year in the entire country, where now it's really a square off between, you know, the Elon Musk Goliath and the David Susan Crawford and the grassroots of our state to fight for a state that's not bought and paid for by the richest person in the world.
Right. You know, and I'm going to hit on that pretty hard here, but I love the idea that you have as the year-round campaign cycle. And, you know, you've preached that for a long time. And what was your favorite part of the experience? Like, presidents know who you are. And, you know, so I can't imagine you would get starstruck. But was there ever a moment where you were like, wow, like that just happened?
I mean, for me, the most emotional moment was the night before the election. We had a kind of rally at the DNC meeting, and we had the presidents of the NEA, of AFSCME, and of AFT all on the stage with me. And my mom has told me all these stories. She was an officer in her AFT local.
Oh, nice.
Like having wrapped in her snuggly the union meetings, and then she'd have to duck out of the room to breastfeed me. And then in high school, I marched with my NEA local, with Madison Teachers Inc., to fight for better wages and working conditions and school funding. And then AFSCME was born in Wisconsin. So so it was like these three unions that have had a huge role in my life, and having the international presidents there with me with this vision of being a party that fights for working people across race and ethnicity, that shows people we're on their side because we go to bat for them. I choked up, and it still means the world to me to think about that moment. And of course, it's the work continues in the fight. I think in this, when you look back at the last election, I don't think people were voting for what Trump is doing now. They really weren't. And they're horrified by what Trump is doing now. There were the people who hadn't voted before but came out this time. I think the biggest driver was they're frustrated by feeling like prices were going up, that their income had gone down because the pandemic era support that had helped a lot of families through the pandemic, that disappeared. And they felt squeezed economically, and they didn't see and feel like Democrats were fighting to change that. So they voted for change. They don't deserve what Trump is unleashed in the country right now. And I think showing that we're on the side of, you know, of folks of modest means, not just the far right billionaires, that's the way that Democrats can win back trust and be able to win elections across the country.
Now, I'm going to get into Wisconsin here. I have one more question about this.
Sure.
And I do have to say, I know I've messaged you probably way too many times, but like, you know, well, like the day Nancy Pelosi came out, I was like, oh my God, how incredible was that? Does this light a fire in you to say, okay, well, maybe I know that running for chair wasn't on the bingo card, but maybe there are some places on the bingo card that you don't know yet.
I feel like I am in a a space of knowing that I don't know the future. Yeah. And that's can be anxiety provoking, but also it's kind of great. Like I'm getting calls about all kinds of things I never thought of before. Yeah. And what I know is that my kind of goals in life are to be a good husband and father and to make the biggest difference I can in the world. And so figuring out what that, you know, what that entails, I know exactly what it entails through April 1st. And then after that, I'm open to ideas.
I appreciate you and I thank you for everything that you've done. And I think you being involved in politics in whatever way makes the world a better place. So please, whatever you do, keep doing that. All right.
Unfortunately for me, I can't resist running into fires. So
nice. Well, good. I like to hear that. So speaking of Wisconsin, holy crap, we got a couple months ahead of us. What's going on? State of the Supreme Court race. We've got Darth Maul. versus the good guys. How we got just like a minute left in this segment. How much money is pouring into Schimmel's side of it? And where is that coming from? Well,
we've tracked $1.4 million in the last day that's flooded in from far right billionaires for Brad Schimmel. I think you can think of Brad Schimmel, if Dan Kelly was Donald Trump, Brad Schimmel is Elon Musk. Yeah. He is someone who wants to just energetically slash, burn, control, dominate, attack in the worst possible ways. Working people across our state, strip away freedom from women, from just about everybody. And he's got the backing, not just of Musk, but also of Dick Uihlein, you know, the biggest funder of the Stop the Steal, Dick and Liz Uihlein, and Diana Hendricks, who famously, you know, promoted the divide and conquer attacks on unions in Wisconsin. Like, this is a rogues gallery of the most vicious people in American politics, and they know Brett Schimmel's their guy. And Susan Crawford is exactly who you want on the bench, a common sense judge whose life has been a story of public service, who understands the impact that like the crime can have on the lives of victims, and that corporate wrongdoing, polluters can do to communities if you hold them accountable. She's represented the kind of even-handed administration of justice that everyone deserves. Yeah. And she's up against someone who represents not just a thumb on the scale, but like an elephant jumping on one side of the scale.
Exactly. So, we're gonna pick this up here on the other side of the break. We got Ben Wickler. We're talking about the state of the Supreme Court race here in Wisconsin. Thank you. Tune in. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. You've got me, Mark Becker, your host. We got the man on the run, Ben Wickler, sitting in a car. I see you're wearing your seatbelt. Just for those listening on the radio that can't see, Ben is he's in the passenger seat and he's wearing a seatbelt. So, you know, hey, spreading the good word of Wisconsin stuff all over. We were talking about...
Yeah, don't stream and drive. That's an important principle.
Yeah, don't stream and drive. Yeah, hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do, man. I get it. Elon Musk announced this week that he purchased hundreds of thousands of dollars in an ad buy for Brad Schimmel. When I was chairman of the Brown County Republican Party, we had Brad Schimmel as a featured speaker at one of our events, and holy cow, like he is not an unbiased litigator. He's not an unbiased person when it comes to the rule of law. You know, and it's interesting when we had him, that was the only time where we had like armed officers and we would shut the doors and lock the doors and then he could speak freely to our general assembly here at the dinner. And so, you know, it was strange. I'd love to talk about that, but it was very weird. how can Democrats combat a seemingly endless amount of money being spent? What a challenge.
Well, here's the thing. We don't need to have as much money as them to defeat them. What we need to have is enough money to organize and communicate with people who believe in democracy and freedom and justice and the rule of law to make sure that they know about this election, they know who Susan Crawford is and who Brad Schimmel is, and that they turn out. Because there are more people who don't want a MAGA extremist right-wing rubber stamp for Elon Musk in the majority of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. There are more people who don't want that and who do want a fair court that actually looks at the law and the Constitution than there are people who want to enable the right-wing takeover. So this is not about a kind of huge number of undecided voters that could go in either direction and are going to sort of respond to the last thing that they saw on TV. There are some voters like that, but the biggest question here is really how many people who don't think that, you know, a totally unchecked Trump, Musk, Robin Voss right-wing takeover is a good idea. How many people like that are there, and do they vote? And when you look historically, typically the Supreme Court races like this have less than half the turnout of the presidential
election. Is that right? Less than half?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. We had 3.4 million people last time. Supreme Court races have ranged from like 1.2 to 1.9 at the very high end.
Oh, my gosh.
When there's a presidential primary, not this time. So this is an election where if you're listening right now and you don't like the idea of a radical far-right MAGA extremist on the Supreme Court, you can recruit your friends to vote, and you'll find that a bunch of them don't even know there is an election right now first. You can go, you know, knock on your neighbor's doors. You can volunteer with WISDEMS. Go to wisdems.org/volunteer. You can chip in a few bucks, and it'll probably pay for, you know, an ad or two that reaches a voter who had no idea that the control of the majority of the court is on the ballot on April 1st. And the impact of an extra, you know, phone call to a friend, an extra hour volunteering, and an extra contribution in this race is so much higher than it is in the presidential race. This is like it's almost like a student council election where you're recruiting your friends going to have
city council, right?
Yeah. So this, there's no amount of money that would make me, and I'm guessing you, vote for Brad Schimmel.
Right.
So it's not like the money is a magic power, but it is a problem if we don't have the people power and the resources to make sure that you know, Democrats and pro-democracy Republicans and independents get out there and cast a ballot for Susan Crawford. So this is, in a way, like, you know, it's both kind of, you know, a fight between us and the other side, but in a way we're running our own race. We just have to make sure we get our folks to the polls. And if you look at how we won in 2020 and 2023, it's that we had higher turnout from people who believe, who, you know, shared values around freedom and democracy than we did from the MAGA voters in the spring election. And that's what we need to replicate this time.
One of the things that I think is interesting is when I saw, you know, I'm a news junkie, and I'm sure, well, I know you are, but I watched Brad Schimmel do an interview on Upfront, and it was, you know, oh, he's just this laid back, and it was, you know, middle of the road. And then there was a different interview that he did, and it was like a completely different person talking about, you know, we have to uphold Act 10 and all of these, you know, just the talking, but completely different person. And one thing that I appreciate about Susan Crawford is I'll see her on Upfront and I'll hear an interview on the radio, and it's the same message. It's the same person. We're doing like what we say on this show all of the time. It's not about left versus right. It's about right versus wrong. I say that all the time. That's my catchphrase, right? Yes. Talk about Susan Crawford.
Susan Crawford, you're exactly right. I've been in, you know, all kinds of different contexts, seeing her and with her, she's exactly the same person. And she's really just like the model of what you'd want as a Supreme Court justice. Somebody who believes in public service, believes in fairness, believes in the law, does not prejudge cases, doesn't make the kinds of fireball throwing attacks that you see from Brad Schimmel all the time. And if you look at what she's done with her life, she's been a public servant doing work as a prosecutor and supporting victims of crime and being especially strong on issues around domestic violence and violence towards women. She is somebody who then served in state government and like oversaw enforcement at the Department of Natural Resources to protect our, you know, waters and streams and things that, you know, sports people and environmental people who like to hike and spend time outdoors that everybody benefits from. She served in private practice as an attorney. She defended Planned Parenthood in court. She defended workers' rights in court. And then she went on the bench, and her record as a judge is exemplary.
Yeah.
She is she's calm. She like doesn't, she you know, really thinks things through as she processes and communicates with people. She's just like, if any of us ever has the fortune or misfortune to come before a judge, what you want is someone like her who, you know, is actually going to listen to you and treat you with respect and then render a judgment that is based on the law and what's right. And it's just such a night and day difference between that and Brad Schimmel, who is a partisan warrior for the MAGA extreme. Like he sees himself as part of a movement to kind of remake the country and repeal all the progress in the 20th century. And I'm saying from the vantage point of the 21st, which is completely out the window in Schimmel's world, he wants to go back to the 1849 abortion ban. He wants to go. This is literally going back two centuries ago. And I think if people knew what Brad Schimmel wants to do to them, they would turn out in record numbers. Right. And the job of everyone is to help spread the word so that people understand what this guy is.
Right. One of the things that I want to talk about too is, and we got like a minute left in this segment, we got one more with Ben Wickler. They were saying that, that all the marbles are at stake. This race could control Congress. Why are they saying that?
So the Wisconsin congressional maps right now have created a situation because the old Supreme Court, in the right wing majority that lasted for 15 years, insisted that the maps in 2022 should be drawn to have the least possible changes to the maps that were put in place by the right wing gerrymanderers and defended in court by Brad Schimmel after the 2011 congressional session or the legislative session. So right now, the maps basically give Republicans in a 50-50 state, where by far the most closely divided state in the country, Republicans have 6 of the 8 congressional districts.
Right.
And there's a bunch of like legal arguments that actually muster in the Wisconsin Constitution.
We got one more segment here with Ben Wickler. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. That was a well-timed break in coverage here for Ben, because then we can pick it right up. So, okay, you were saying on the other end that this is why the right is talking about this, that this could be for control in Congress. So revisit that if you could.
Yes. So right now, Wisconsin's maps are rigged by design by the former Supreme Court majority to ensure that Republicans have the majority of seats. In fact, they have 6 of the 8 congressional seats in a 50-50 state. Democrats have 2. Mark Pogan and Gwen Moore, Republicans have 6. And
they're the best, by the way. Aren't they awesome?
They're fantastic.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really great. Not the 6. We have some of, we're not sending their best.
We're not.
But essentially, you know, there are people who've made arguments that this kind of partisan gerrymandering actually does not pass muster under our state's constitution. The state Supreme Court has never adjudicated those issues. But what we know for sure is that if Brad Schimmel gets on the state Supreme Court, he will do anything to prevent the state Supreme Court looking seriously at the constitutionality of partisan gerrymandering. So Elon Musk actually polled were able to see a poll that he ran in the state Supreme Court race, and he asked voters if it would make them more or less likely to vote for Brad Schimmel if the following statement was true. Quote, President Donald Trump says electing Brad Schimmel is vitally important and that it's the difference between a Republican majority in Congress that will pass his agenda and a Democrat majority that will work to defeat his agenda. So for the GOP, they see the Supreme Court race as a chance to prevent a fair consideration of the congressional maps. And we also have seen Republican groups fundraising on re-gerrymandering the state legislative maps. They want to go back to the old gerrymandered maps. So it essentially would, if Republicans get in and they block any consideration of the congressional maps and re-gerrymander the state legislative maps, there's no future where the majority could determine the majority of Wisconsin's congressional seats or the state legislative seats, Republicans would always have the power of the purse in the state of Wisconsin, and it would help ensure that, you know, Mike Johnson never poses a check on Donald Trump and Elon Musk in Congress. So there's a lot at stake. And on top of that, voting rights have come up over and over. And so and election certifications come up over and over. So the U.S. Senate majority, the presidential election in 2028, and the House majority are all affected by what happens in this one Supreme Court race on April 1st.
That's crazy. There's also another race that's happening. And at the time of recording this, this is primary day. So, you know, you're all going to know what happened. But I do want to talk about a theme that's going on in the state superintendent race, and it's vouchers and not vouchers. And a very good friend of mine is a president of a large school board. And they've told me about how vouchers has just decimated their entire district, thousands of kids. What's going on there?
So there's a kind of elemental question of whether we should have a great public school in every neighborhood in the state of Wisconsin. And Republicans are trying to essentially shred the public education system so that they can then use vouchers everywhere and fund private schools, religious schools with public money, political right-wing schools, that they want to end a kind of guarantee of equal good public education for all and switch to a voucher system. Yep. Yeah, they want to end accountability. They want to end public oversight. It undermines democracy. You know, schools are locally administered. There's local school boards. There's all these decisions that are made that the public has a voice on. And there's a flood of Republican money to support one candidate for state superintendent, Brittany Kinzer, to try to shift to a voucher-only system. And where this has been tried in other states, it's been bad. And for any kid, whatever kind of school you go to, we want kids to succeed in our state. What we don't want is the wholesale destruction of the public education system. So we're recording this on the day of the primary. We don't know who's going to come out of it. But I think when we get through, it's critical to make sure that on April 1st, folks are voting both for Susan Crawford for the state Supreme Court, but also voting against a wholesale voucherization of Wisconsin public schools. And then in local races, we have mayoral races in a whole bunch of places. There's city council races, there's school board races, there's school referenda, which, by the way, Republicans in the legislature are trying to ban local school referenda to prevent local districts from countering what Republicans have done on a statewide level, which is defunding public education. Like, there's a lot at stake. This is a high stakes election. And anyone listening right now, recruit everyone you know, because we need votes to turn out on April 1st.
So, and that's I couldn't say it better myself. As we look ahead in Wisconsin, so, you know, let's hope the right thing happens in April. What's in store after that? I mean, you know, is Tony Evers going to run? I remember sitting with him in Ripon, and it was me, him, and Charlie Sykes. Talk about a surreal thing. Tracy Mangold was there. And he said to us, he's like, we're going to flip the legislature in 2 years. And we're like, what? He goes, yep, it's going to happen. And he talked, but like, no joke, he was serious. It's going to happen. He goes, mark my words, it's going to happen. Is that realistic?
So as long as Republicans don't win, as long as Elon Musk doesn't put Brad Schimmel on Wisconsin State Supreme Court, and we have the fair maps that we have now, then in 2026, there's a real chance that, you know, if Governor Evers does decide to run again, he becomes three-term Tony, that we flip the state Senate majority and that we flip the state Assembly majority. It's only two seats in the Senate and five in the Assembly now, down from 6 and 15 that we had to flip. The maps mean that if the public decides it's had enough of Republican misrule and attacks, and they want to give Democrats a shot, that the public could actually decide to put Democrats in charge. And then Democrats can show that we're a party that believes we all do better when we all do better. And, you know, I think the record, if you zoom out, of Democratic governance is so much more effective than Republican governance. So there's a real chance that we go the full boomerang from a blue trifecta after 2008 to a red trifecta in 2010, and then fight year by year, back 2026 could be the year that we win a blue trifecta in Wisconsin and have a chance not just to correct the damage that Scott Walker and Robin Voss and the GOP inflicted on our state, but to actually step into the 21st century and make this a state that works for everyone.
That's the dream. That's remarkable. You posted a video this week. We're talking about national issues and what to do. You talked about a three-pronged response to the moment of crisis. I shared it. I hope everybody sees that because, you know, there's so much right now of this uncertainty. What do I do? What's happening? You know, I call it the Phil Spector. It's wall of sound from the Trump administration. And no one really knows what can I do? How do I do it? What are Democrats doing right now to fight what's going on nationally?
So this is the three-part strategy. First, it's to make sure people know about the impact of what Trump and Musk and Republicans in Congress and at every level are doing and how it actually affects people's lives. Don't make it about norms. Don't make it about acronyms of federal agencies. Make it about the actual effect of taking away the food people need to put on their table, making the markets disappear for farmers' crops. We grow food in Wisconsin farms that nourishes people around the world because USAID buys it and distributes it in the Food for Freeze program. Suddenly that's dried up. Make it about the impact on real folks. And make sure that people who are directly affected are heard from. The people who are getting fired who just dreamed of being able to, you know, protect clean water or make sure that planes didn't crash who are suddenly being laid off by the Trump administration. That's item one, is to create a political cost, blowback, contain the damage of what Republicans are doing. Item two is to lift up and support Democrats doing the right thing. So tonight, I guess this will be in the rearview mirror when these people are listening, but Governor Evers is doing his budget address.
Yes.
He's going to lay out his priorities for the state. And there's so much there that people are gonna want to stand up and cheer for, including public education funding. So making sure people find out what Democrats are actually standing for and fighting for and doing puts wind in our sails. There's a lot we can do, especially in the state level. And that work is happening. It's important to lift it up. And the third thing is to win elections. And that's where April 1st comes in. The thing that will help end this moment of crisis for the entire American experiment is if Republicans in Congress discover that their jobs are on the line if they don't actually stand up to this administration. Right now, they're only afraid of Republican primary challenges and Donald Trump's mean tweets and Elon Musk's tweets and his super PACs. But they should be concerned about what the public thinks of them because they could lose general elections. And so winning elections, overperforming in elections, winning on April 1st in the Supreme Court race and everything else, it's absolutely critical both for the direct impact that it has on who holds power and what happens in people's lives, but also because it sends a message that we still have the fighting spirit, that we still believe in an America that lives up to our founding ideals, something we've never quite achieved but need to keep striving for, and that we can defeat the people who want to shred this country and then sell off the scraps to enrich billionaires. Like, if we can show that we can win, then we get momentum and energy to be able to fight back and make a difference. And so we have to do all three at once, but we can do this. We can do hard things. Our country's faced worse moments before. We're going to get through this.
Yeah. And this, what it's interesting is last time around when Trump was in office, there were guardrails. You know, there were people that were like, we're not going to do these insane things. But it seems like every day, you know, Donald Trump and his not so merry band of morons break dozens of laws, stretch the Constitution to its breaking point. And this week they're holding meetings with Russia and themselves about Ukraine, and they just forgot to invite Ukraine about their own damn country.
Yes, it's unbelievable. I mean, it is cartoonish. They're really like cartoon villains. I'm sure it'll be the case that there will be future wars over whether you can accurately describe this era in history books or whether it will seem too partisan to simply document what Trump and Musk and the Republicans are doing. But that's where we are. And, you know, we have to remember that there are more of us than there are of them, that this election was not a mandate. Trump didn't even win a majority of votes in this country, won the popular vote, but most people did not vote for Donald Trump, who did vote, and a lot of people didn't vote. The path is there for us to contain the damage and build something better. And as terrifying as this moment is, this has to be the seedbed for the kind of future that everyone deserves.
What do you think is going to happen? I mean, do you think when we look forward to everything that's happening and all of this chaos and all of this noise and all of that, will April 1st really give us an idea of where we're headed? Because, I mean, Wisconsin's a bellwether, man, you know?
Yeah. I think we'll learn a lot on April 1st. I believe that we're going to find it within ourselves to fight back and be able to win. It's going to take all of us. If you're listening right now, you need to be the hero in this story. this cannot be a spectator sport. It's going to take everyone getting everyone they know to go out and cast a ballot and recruit their own friends to be able to go out and cast a ballot. That can overcome the richest man in the world trying to buy Wisconsin Supreme Court if we just do our work. And if we do that, we can show our country, our state, ourselves, the world, that the future is not written in stone. This country does not have to collapse under the weight of the must-Trump attacks. We can fight back, and we will, and we'll win.
I think we'll win, too. And I think so much is thanks to what you've done in this state. I mean, look back at your entire time. What's the most memorable point of your political activity in Wisconsin?
I mean, I think it's actually that moment on election night in 2023, when the four women justices who made up the new Supreme Court majority walked in and raised their arms high together, with Lizzo blaring, and the crowd exploded. And it was like clear that we'd created a new birth of democracy in our state. And that's what Republicans are trying to strangle in the cradle, but we're not going to let them do it. We are going to keep moving forward. We're going to unrig the state. We're going to show the country that even if the right rigs this whole nation, that we can unrig it. And if we can do that, there is a much brighter future ahead.
I agree. I'm going to ask you one time, what do you want to do when you grow up?
Step by step, man.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, ultimately, I just want my kids to be able to grow up in a free country where they can be proud of what the country stands for. And that's kind of the North Star for me.
Yeah. I'm so grateful, you know, for the things that that you've done. I think, you know, whatever happens after April and whatever your future is, the role that you played in Wisconsin politics for a long time was a cornerstone. And keep walking into fires, man. I appreciate it very, very much.
Thanks so much, Mark. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Bye. Ben Wickler, everybody, here on the Rational Revolution. We'll talk to you later, buddy.
Sounds good. All right, take care.
Thank you. Well, that was Mr. Chairman. He's done some remarkable things in Wisconsin, and we've been so lucky to have him. And maybe he'll stick around. I hope he does. But I think he's got some. He's going to do some big things. And we're very blessed to have him here and have his leadership, because I mean the things that he's done is pivotal. So yeah, my thoughts are coming up on the other side of the break. Thank you so much. This is the Rational Revolution.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome. What's up, y'all? Oh, well, that was Ben Wickler. You know, he's the hardest guy to get on the radio on the show because he's so busy. And I will admit this right now. You know, they said, oh, he's got a half hour. And it's like, okay, sounds good. And we went like 40 minutes. So thanks, buddy. Appreciate you very much. One thing that's interesting is kind of looking back and what's going on. And there's a question that I have when it talks about national stuff. And it's are we great yet? You know, so far, these are some of the things that we have done courtesy of Donald Trump and the co-president, unelected billionaire Elon Musk. On day one, more than 1,500 people who stormed the Capitol in an attempt to overthrow the election and the biggest threat to democracy since the Civil War were freed, pardoned, and had their sentences commuted, including, as Margaret Brennan said as she interviewed the vice president this week, someone who plunged an electroshock weapon in the neck of a police officer was sentenced to 12 years in prison, and someone who hit a cop while wearing brass reinforced knuckle gloves and held the cop on the ground as other rioters assailed the officer for over 20 seconds, causing a severe concussion. When the vice president responded, he denounced not the rioters or the abusers of the police, but he denounced Joe Biden and the Justice Department. This is from the party of Black Back the Blue. Are we great yet? We fired 300 people who are in charge of our nuclear stockpile. These people were so important that when the government officials found out that they were axed, oops, these people are famously hard to find, and they're actually being pretty difficult to get a hold of. They're trying to resort to calling them their cell phones, social media ads. Are we great? We've eliminated USAID and the thousands of employees that work for the agency. Some staffers detail harrowing exits from places like the Democratic Republic of the Congo amid violence as the government hastily abandoned them. USAID programs, including the following, have been eliminated. A program to aid victims of Agent Orange in Vietnam. A school system in Lebanon that shut 414,000 children out of school. A program that purchased $2 billion, or more than 475,000 metric tons of U.S.-grown crops, such as corn, soybeans, wheat, etc., for humanitarian aid that helped feed nearly 282 million people in 59 countries that experience food shortages. That massively impacts Wisconsin farmers, as Ben Wickler talked about. PEPFAR, the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief that has saved more than 26 million lives in 55 countries. It's gone. Democracy and human rights efforts across the globe to help people spread the word about atrocities in places like Myanmar, Ukraine. A program in Brazil called the Partnership of Amazon Biodiversity that focuses on improving the livelihoods of indigenous people in forest communities. Schools, vaccination programs, medication, medical equipment, media organizations, literacy programs that benefit the most needy, that spread goodwill and spread American ideals to every corner of the world. Gone. I ask, are we great? Yet, our fearless leader quotes some of the worst tyrants in history, from Adolf Hitler to Napoleon, and vowing to become a dictator himself, even if only for one day. And then he follows it up by appointing people not for their wisdom and worldly experience, but instead for their allegiance to his own ideals and willingness to put himself and his goals over the very rule of law they swore to uphold. Friends, are we great yet? We have fired tens of thousands of federal workers in an alleged effort to save money, all while spending $50 million for Donald Trump to attend the Super Bowl and the Daytona 500. Certainly that makes us great. We investigate every facet of the American experience, including accessing you and your family's tax records, social security numbers, most important personal information, all while being blissfully ignorant about the fact that $18 billion Elon Musk has gotten from the federal government in the form of subsidies and contracts. Because we only investigate those who don't believe, right? Does that make us great? We have abandoned our best friends. We've insulted our closest allies. We've negotiated with tyrants over victims. We have told sovereign nations to give up their own land. We've broken up ironclad unions of nations. We've destabilized the fragile network of order, all in just over a month. Are we great yet? They have done all these things, focused on everything other than what was promised during the campaign to make life easier, to lower the cost of living, slow the growth of inflation, allow communities to thrive without having to worry whether or not they can simply make it. They have decimated 60 years of progress in expanding civil rights and equity in our society in a head-spinning array of executive orders in an unprecedented effort to roll back democracy and the rights and liberties of American citizens. These efforts are masked as so-called threats, attacks on DEI policies, diversity, equity, and inclusion that used to be shining values that would make Mr. Rogers proud. One of the first executive orders the president signed was to eliminate affirmative action. They've eliminated things from the federal calendar like Black History Month, Women's History Month, Pride Month, Hispanic Heritage Month, amongst others. We've mandated that schools end our diversity programs that only engage in patriotic education. Hello, North Korea. Surely we must be great now. Because, let me tell you, if those things make us great, I shudder to think what happens when we lose. The things that we've done in just a month of this madness has been beyond the pale. And that laundry list is like scratching the surface. And I'm afraid that when we scratch the surface, all we're going to find is more surface. You know? It's something that it's almost beyond words. And I'm really encouraged by people like Ben Wickler, who are able to articulate what's happening and articulate the reasons why we need to fight and articulate why this is important. And that's why we need to lift those people up and keep those messages going. It's tough, but it only gets better when we all work together. And there is a big red wave that we are fighting against every day. And it is a danger and a threat to your family, your kids, your very way of life. And, you know, mark my words, America wins when this man and the people who enabled him are left for the ash heap of history. It is up to us to make that come to be. Don't you dare give up, and don't you ever give in. I have said this time and time again. It is not about left versus right. It is about right versus wrong. Thanks for tuning in to another week of the Rational Revolution. My thanks to Mr. Chairman Ben Wickler, Amanda behind the glass. We'll see you next week on the Rational Revolution.
Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died?
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.